What you are about to hear is part two of my podcast with Jacob Blomqvist. Jacob is a lecturer at Malmo University and a fifth dan Aikido practitioner. In this episode, we concentrate on the topics of martial arts, particularly Aikido, and its interplay with Jacob's scientific career and life in general. We'll talk about ukemi, the art of receiving, or in other words, handling an attack or technique, managing aggression, discipline and creativity, and how the current pandemic has affected our life, considering how important the dojo, the place where we practice, is for our physical and psychological health. I have done my best to ensure that this section can be heard independently from part one. This means that if you listen to part one, you can probably skip the first 5 minutes of the podcast. As I repeat a small introduction about Jacob and how we met. At the same time, I tried to make the transition between these two parts smooth. This was a balancing act and I hope I got it right. Now, without further ado, I bring to you my conversation with Jacob, part two, martial arts. So, well, first of all, Jacob, thanks a lot for joining me. I actually am really looking forward for the conversation today. So it's great to have you, and also great to have the cat around.
And now, just because you said that, I'm sorry to say, now he's by the door, and of course being very pesky and saying, now I want out again.
Just take the cat out. This shows this is life. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, it's one of those, it should be a sketch. All of this should be just be one big sketch. It is already a sketch, I'm sure, but this, like, this nonsense is always...
Yeah.
Everything
counts. Yeah, it is. So, basically, the first thing I wanted to quickly do is basically introduce a little bit how we met, because that was for me at least quite a funny part of our relationship, because you do science, right? So now you are a lecturer, I guess that's the right term, in Malmo University.
That's right.
And we met because you actually did your PhD in the same department where I ended up doing my PhD.
That's right. Exactly.
And what it was very odd is that I remember your face because you were probably sort of traveling around, you know, the department. Yeah. And we probably even talked one or two times. And then, you know, you went your separate way. I didn't see you again because that was my time as a master's student.
Right.
And then I saw you back at the dojo.
So that's, I think that's right. And I'm one of those who, it was probably easier for you to kind of remember me than the opposite. Because you came in as a kind of junior and I was just almost on my way out as a PhD. Yeah. And obviously, you know, it wasn't a super big department, but it was still big enough that it were quite it was enough PhD students and master students that you didn't have check on everyone there.
Yeah, exactly.
And then you were gone for a while, or like we didn't really see each other for a while. Mm-hmm. I don't know. What could it be? 2-3 years or something? I don't know. Maybe, probably something like that. Maybe I can't remember. And then, obviously, we met in the dojo, in the Aikido dojo. And again, most likely, I had that kind of deja vu. Like, who is this? I recognize his face somehow. But I can't remember if you, you figured it out first or...
Yeah, I think I figured out probably after a couple of interactions, because also there's something about martial arts and the fact that, you know, you are wearing a gi. And you also present yourself in a different way, right? Because, again, I joined the dojo. I was, I was just starting my Aikido day. So I was just a student. And you're presenting there yourself. You know, you are teaching.
Not necessarily... I was probably teaching a class or something like that, too.
Correct. So. And then also, I think the other thing was because you were in a slightly... In our former department, in chemical physics in Lund, each group is slightly independent from each other, especially the group where you were on.
Right. I was an odd one out in that department as a whole. You were more like mainstream than in a sense than I was. When you were there, I believe I was the only one under my supervisor.
Yes.
So and doing things that no one else, like everyone else, were kind of doing the same thing, and I was not. So, yeah, that's true. So I was kind of on the fringe, and therefore probably more like, who is this guy versus everyone else. It makes sense.
Okay, so you managed by luck and again observation to end up in the in a very, very similar, or not, I shouldn't say similar, but you end up in an environment that reminds you of the things that you were doing, right? So you have the right tools to basically attack those questions in a way.
I was just, you know, it's easy. I feel almost ashamed to say I was lucky, but yeah, of course, we are either something happens and it's luck, but at some point you realize, well, I guess I'm just one of those person who, yes, I was at the right person, the right time, the right place, and all that kind of stuff, or lucky enough, I feel like. But obviously, there are some kind of personal qualities, hopefully, that are involved with this. Now, coming back is that I always like to be very social, and I like to try new things. When I started as an undergrad student in Lund, I had my eyes set for Aikido. I had been doing jiu-jitsu as a younger person, and been at several seminars back then. And at one of those seminars, there was a guy doing magical stuff. You know, jiu-jitsu is pretty straightforward, relatively speaking, especially back then. You can kind of understand it. You can see that it can be technical and very advanced, but you can kind of understand it. But then I went to a seminar where this very short Japanese guy who... semi-Japanese. He's Japanese, but he lived in Denmark. I think still living in Denmark. He had this odd, you know, he broke in Danish, Swedish, Norwegian, and Japanese. It was a very odd kind of seminar. And he was one out of a group of instructors, like a multidisciplinary seminar. We had a lot of those back then. And he did something else. It was kind of jiu-jitsu, but it looked more like fake magic. You know, efficient alla moda. It was something strange but beautiful, and it looked incredibly efficient if you look at it from that point of view, because obviously he was very small in stature, and somehow all these big guys, they were freezing up and they were like kind of locked up in weird ways. But it was called Aikijutsu, and so I was like, all right, let's go, it's Aiki. So I had that in mind, and then we had nothing like that where I grew up. So then when I did my military service, and then I also did...
So what age was this?
I started probably 12, 13, and I ended up doing it until 15 or 16 or something like that. Mm-hmm. Then I had other life, you know, music and whatever, and I was very involved with that. But then after my high school, my gymnasium days, I did... have a short thing of doing something else, and then I started my math. I lived in Hässleholm, and I commuted to Lund to really start math full time. I did have time to do that for half a year, and then I was military for a year, and then after that I actually moved, or in the end of that I moved down to Lund. So from that point on I kept doing the academia full time after my military service, and then it was mostly chemistry and physics, as I said. But from the get-go, I was like, I'm going to do Aikido, because I knew, I had seen Aikido, there was a club, Aikido club in Lund. And I actively, like a heat-seeking missile, I actively looked for it and where it was, and I visited very quickly. And, you know, I didn't, if I remember correctly, I didn't really follow we had beginners times or take-ins. But I just kind of went there, and it could have been a beginner's. I can't even remember. I think it was probably beginner's class anyway. So they took me in, but very quickly I took every class and I became fanatic, and I just, I just loved it. And it was one of those things yet again, where I felt I just want to get really good at this. And it was also very social. I mean, we would stay at that place where we had, then we had our own facility and a sauna and a place we could sit and drink coffee and tea and whatever. So we would train several hours. After training, we would throw each other around a bit more, and then we would sit and talk. And then the couple of us would go to the sauna, and then we would have to, it was midnight suddenly, and we would have to turn off the alarm to because the guard would come.
Right.
So then it's all right, baby, we better go home now. And then back to 8 o'clock damn class on chemistry in the morning. So it was really tough, but I loved it. And it was just one of those things that we had classes every day, Monday to Friday, so I could do it. And I just obsessively did it a lot, and I just enjoyed it, and realized it was something that I seemed to be, again, seemed to be pretty good at it, or I could have an affinity for it. And I just, yeah, I just I had this kind of idea. I want to get really good at this, and I enjoyed already then to be, I didn't mind teaching a class. So very quickly I would start teaching class as a pretty low graded person. Yeah, I'm indebted to that time. We were a group, very good group of people that not everyone trained as much as I did, but there was enough people enough so that there were people training there. Then we moved out to the facility that we have now, still have, like the one you joined us
Yes.
with, and already with kind of changes and so on. It's a great place, obviously. It's middle of town, but the whole population started to kind of grow. I'm growing up, and I am getting a family, and I was doing my PhD, and everything kind of started to happen around that. But yet still, Aikido was very much like, a centerpiece for me in my life.
Right. And also I think what it would be interesting is to see, because in martial arts you tend to learn in a very different way to what you learn within academia, right? So in academia it's very much like let's say logic based, especially here in the place where we study, right? So it's very logic based. You have to see like the whole chain, how it follows up, and you really need to understand step by step the way. In martial arts, it's in and especially traditional martial arts, in many cases it's a lot of observation, imitation, and then sort of absorbing things up. And I think that also for me, that's why it was great to have it while I was doing my PhD, because it was like completely different part of my brain. I was not tired. Like if I would go to class, it's not like I was tired or fatigated from science. I was like, because it was, I could connect something else and just go for it, and it was liberating in that sense.
That's a very good point. And I lived when I started Aikido, or when I yeah when I had a chemical department where we also worked or did our PhD, was very close to where we actually had the dojo or when I started. So it happened to be in the north end of Lund. It was like uphill. Lund is a horrible city. It's like a big uphill and everything is biking. I lived almost on the opposite side, like the west southwest side. So it's very much an uphill. So every morning I would go to class, to chemistry class and or whatever math, and then I would finish up somewhere around 4, and I would bike all the way to my dorm again, eat something, and force myself not to sit down because I knew I was going to fall asleep. So I just had to bike all the way up again, almost identical distance all the way up, go to training at 6 o'clock or whatever it started. And then at, midnight, I would bike home again. So it was like a lot of biking up and down. But as you say, once you got there, it was a completely different thing. It was learning, but it was, as you say, it was activating a different part. First of all, obviously it was physical, so it was a relief of using your head, but it was also good for your body, obviously. But instead of having to start like thinking from the beginning, what is this and why this connection between this, you might do that as well after class, but mainly you would just, okay, an instructor is just showing you now do these two movements and do them until I clap again, and you don't like no thinking basically. You just do, and you just get into your body, and you go into your partner that you're working with, and you try to do it as best as you can, and you have a lot of fun doing it because Aikido is a very move like it's a very mobile type of martial arts. You move around, you're thrown a lot, and you roll a lot. So you see a lot of these up and down, up and down, up and down. No, really any punches or kicks that you can see maybe in other arts. It's much more of this up and down, rolls, 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 and up and down, throw, 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 throw. And it was a very joyful feeling because, like, you're one of those few people that really enjoy being thrown around as well.
Yes.
It's like the tingle. It's almost like a roller coaster feeling, like you
Yeah,
just uno.
and that's one of the things I really wanted to talk to you, because it was I still think that one of the first time I saw you,
You were actually not teaching. Now it comes back to me. Actually, Jonas.
Oh, for once.
Yeah, Jonas was teaching because sometimes you know that he will teach the beginner class.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
And
yeah,
you were sort of around, and he just picks you up, and then he decides that, you know, he's gonna throw, you know, show a technique to the beginner.
Show off a little bit.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then at some point he just went like really fast, really hard, and you know this type of let's call it like neck throwing, like you know, like it really goes for your neck. And you had to do this very, very efficient but beautiful fall, you know?
Right. It was like acrobatics almost, right?
Yeah, but it's like, it's a combination, right? Because it's acrobatic to be functional.
Right.
So then you sort of, you fall down. And then I just remember that I was like,
wow.
that's what I want to learn.
Right.
Like, and more than Jonas doing the technique, I was like, I want to be able that somebody is going to do that to my neck.
Right.
And I'm gonna survive.
and you know what? That's interesting. When you mentioned it, one of the driving points or the motivators for me, we had a couple of people when I started. One was a guy called Jonas Gimhed, and another one was called Josef. Who both of them, the first one was incredibly tall, another one is incredibly short, but both of them were very good ukemi. This is the name for this being thrown around and taking the throw and rolling and stuff. So I had done martial arts before, so I wasn't scared of taking falls, and I was, you know, semi-fit, I guess, and I didn't really fear that part. But I wanted to, just like you, I wanted to be able to do that. Yes, I wanted to do the technique, and I wanted to be brilliant at that, but more than anything, I didn't want, if they can do it, I'm going to be able to do that. And I wanted to be able to do that. And you know how it is. You took pride in being able to be thrown and feel good about it and to not be a burden, if you like, to the one throwing. You should have more, let's say, skill than needed for them to do whatever they wanted to do.
Yeah.
So you just drove yourself at that part of Aikido and this training to just be able to take that fall. So they became, or particularly Jonas Timmer, became like a mentor, and he did this very, some kind of unique falls, you know, the leaf falls that no one else would do. And I was like, hey, I'm going to do that. So I took pride in just, you know, after class, he showed me, and it's like, it's all about fear, no fear. So you did it until, and you hurt a little bit, but then you know, all right, now I can do it. And it's, you're building your muscles and you're building your idea of how to do it. And you can do it, and you barely use that fall, but you did not want to be able to not use it.
Right.
So whatever happens, you should be able to do it. And yes, that more than anything, ukemi has been, that part of training to take a fall has been the constant of Aikido for me.
Yeah.
You know,
and,
technique.
And,
yeah.
And also, I think in my case, it was like, that was one thing. And then the other thing, it was like, I wanted to be fun to practice with.
Yeah.
Because I immediately realized, okay, there's a lot of good guys here. And I'm a beginner. I want to learn as much as possible. I don't want to be, you know, I don't want to limit their training so they have fun. So
you,
then
you want to be the one that they like to hang out with on the mat. Like they like to be that one. Oh yeah, we can take Rafa because he's fun. Particularly the ones that you knew that could have a lot of fun.
Right.
So you had those, whatever, handful of people that could really rock and roll if they wanted to, and you wanted to be able to allow them to do that and enjoy you so that you would be kind of in that gang.
Exactly. So you become part of the group in a way.
Right. Very quickly,
and, Yeah. And I think that was, that for me, again, that was my love. My love was like, okay, I need to be fun to practice with so I get to grab the people that really know what they are doing, and I, you know, because that's the way to learn. Like,
yeah.
Also,
absolutely.
Like, I remember, like, in many cases, people ask me, like, was it a problem to learn, you know, a martial art when all the teaching was in Swedish? And I was like, I don't care. I was not listening. I was just looking.
Yeah.
And I think that actually was sometimes to my benefit to not really know what this guy was
probably
saying.
We
because,
talk too much.
Yeah, and also because the point is, like, if I was interested, for example, in your feet, and you were talking about something very special, I don't know, about the shoulder form
but you
or whatever.
Can focus on that, yeah.
Yeah, exactly, because I was not distracted by your good point about the shoulder. Maybe I missed it, but I was, you know, like, looking at the feet.
Yeah.
So.
No, but that makes sense. It does. And it really speaks volume to both your, let's say, example of what I think, what's really lovely about Aikido is it's easy enough on the body that almost anyone can train it as age-wise and young. I mean, I teach a lot of kids now, but also there are older people. you don't have to take those fancy photos. You don't have to do all these kind of fancy stuff because techniques don't really care about that. But if you want to have some fun, you can if you have a partner that are able to do that. But I do find that if you look around and you look at those people that are really able to excel pretty quickly, in particularly in Aikido, in martial arts in general, but probably at least in Aikido, in my experience, are the ones who really had that sharp goal. Like, I wanted to be like that person, or I look up to that person because that person can take those falls and I don't want to be worse than, I want to be better than that, at least as good as that person, because that looks a lot of fun. You know, no matter what, it looks like something I want to be able to do, and I don't want to be limited. I don't want to limit myself in that. So I'm going to do whatever it takes to get to that level. And when you do that, when you have that kind of mindset, you don't let things limit you. You know, in terms of when you get to training, you do more than the training permits. You do more than what is taught in class. Let's say you stay after, you enjoy practicing after, you enjoy talking and having a beer with the people after, because you want to be part of that group. It feels like it has nothing to do with Aikido, but it ends up somehow being important to Aikido because you enjoy the community and camaraderie, so that once you are on the mat, you know that you have this very nice connection with these people and they know you, and then you know that, well, it's fun, we can relax, and he takes it good. Right. Then everyone grows, and because you take it and because you allow yourself to get a little bit bashed up, then you grow incredibly fast compared to those who don't. They don't need to, they might not be their goal, but if your goal is to be able to do that, then you somehow just do what is needed to get to that level. And I think it's very obvious when you look around where you have great skill in Aikido and in other, I guess, physical arts, but interesting enough also in science, is that you kind of you don't let the structure limit your ability to do what's needed for you to get to where you need to be. Sometimes it's luck for sure, but but it's also, again, to be a little bit more independent than maybe the system allows you to be or expect you to be.
And I think also in this sense, it speaks to this idea that what we're saying a little bit before is you need to have the discipline to learn the let's say the forms, but also to learn the faults. Because once you have those and you were disciplined enough to just say, I don't care how annoying it is, I'm going to learn that form. Because once you have the building blocks, then you can be free, right?
Yeah.
Because then you can really start to have fun and explore and actually have creativity. Because if you try to be creative without being able to take a fall, you are going to get hurt.
Or you will hurt someone else.
Correct, right. Which would be worse in this case.
Right, it would even be worse. You're right.
Yeah.
And you have no way of proofreading either yourself or what they're doing or what they were trying to do. So you're right. They have that kind of receiving role, if you like, the moral is that it would be nice or it seemed to be that if you can find a way to proofread yourself, like to be independent on the system, to say that, how can I be sure that what I do is correct, or the basic techniques or the basic understanding of math or the basic understanding of my measurement equipment, whatever. How can I be sure that that I know what I'm doing, or that it's working, whatever? I'm not going to rely on anyone else in a way I'm not going to rely and just say, all right, I accept that. You know, I'm to some degree, yes, but ultimately, if you want to excel, you stop accepting that. You just kind of like, right, no, I can't just take it and be a passive receiver of that information. I have to own it. I have to be the owner of of my own, you know, progress, if you like. So you do whatever it takes to both push a little bit further and faster maybe than normal, but also take ownership of your own practice and on your own owning a honing of your skill. So again, coming back to science, I don't know how it was for you, but back when I did my PhD there, it was very underdeveloped in terms of the courses you were supposed to take. So we were kind of left to our own demise. We were supposed to have all these courses in terms of hours or credits, but they were not there. They were like, you looked around and those people at the organic chemistry, they just had this package. And in the psychology department, they just had like 60 credits, just boom, and you almost felt sorry for them. I had nothing. I had safety in lab, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah,
that you had to know in order to teach
the generic
the undergrad
stuff, yes.
Yeah. A didactic course or whatever. The rest, I had to figure out myself. I had to look, like, what can I study in order to feel that I grow in my field? And on one end, it was horrible because you felt like, oh, you know, what do I know? But it also, yet again, it forced you to take ownership of the skill. Like, what do I think I miss? What do I feel I don't know enough of? And be honest about it and just say, all right, then I need to study that. So I'm going to study that. I'm going to find a course that is that. Even if it was an undergrad level, I will take that course. And that's what I did. And the same with martial arts or Aikido. I'm not going to be, except in the very early stages where you obviously had no, you don't know left from right and your foot from your hands or, you know, anything. You just basically accept what's coming at you and you to put your hand there and keep that straight form, whatever. But very quickly, you kind of, maybe not break out of it, but you take ownership of knowing yourself and saying, what's my goal is to get there. Am I going to get there just doing that? Or do I have to find a way to get there by doing more of that, by staying after and just taking ukemi, like taking 100 falls by someone? Because it's not a technique, but it's necessary, we feel, to be one of those that they will pick up to practice with so that you will get good at those techniques, so you get advanced. So you can see those kind of like, yeah, but I don't want to be limited by this. So I'm going to make sure that that part is covered. I'm going to do what's necessary for that. And then you look at an IQ or another technique or whatever and say, I don't really feel comfortable in that, but I'm going to only do that for a while after practice. So you take ownership of that.
And not only, I think that then the other thing that it allows you is to actually manage aggression very well, because I think that one of the things that you notice is that if you know that you can survive it, then the aggression feels different.
Right.
Right. And I think that it's the same. It, oddly enough for me, it reminds me of when you would have an argument, like a scientific argument with somebody. Like if you felt like you were very shallow in that field and somebody starts to argue with you, you feel like grass because you have no idea what the hell you are going to do about
this. Right.
And then I think that that's the very interesting thing, is that when you are confident enough and then you start to really know what you're talking about, then you actually can, because at the end, science is conflict in these moments. Like you are going to have an argument. You have an opinion. I have another one. We need to go to the facts and see who is right. And actually this is very similar to having an actual physical confrontation, but it's, much more psychological in this sense. But I think it really helped me to learn from a completely different perspective, how to learn and how to manage aggression.
Yeah, instead of using your, it's not a, you see using your body as an example of this, and being 100% comfortable and confident in your ability within this setting, for sure,
yeah,
but within this setting to know basically whoever is going to be on the mat, you go to a seminar, you don't know the person, and you feel, I'm fine. No matter, I have yet to come to a place almost in my whole, except, you know, the early days, and I felt so comfortable in my own self, maybe overly confident, what I know, but I felt so comfortable and confident that I could handle through ukemi because of that. That's like the key, that I never felt that fear anymore. And because I didn't feel the fear, of the unknown, I feel like the comfort in knowing that I will be able to handle myself, I will be able to respond intuitively with my body, in this case of the Aikido, it's so rewarding, because then you can open up completely to whatever is coming to you in that setting, in the Aikido setting or in the scientific setting. You don't have anything more to prove, if you like, for yourself, and particularly to yourself, so that you can just open up and learn, and you can just accept, oh, that was an interesting feeling that I had not actually felt before. I wanted to know what they did, and I want to try to emulate that so that I get and yet another, you know, skill set or aspect of training that I didn't know I could have. But if you're so occupied about being uncomfortable or being afraid because you don't feel confident enough in your ability to handle whatever is coming, the unknown, then that is going to be occupying your head, the protection mechanism and all this kind of stuff. So like, I don't want to get hurt, so I'm going to do whatever it takes to not be hurt. That is opposite of being open to whatever happens. And if you are confident in your in your scientific field enough, at least, that whatever someone asks you, even if you don't know the answer, you're fine with it. You can just say, oh, that was really interesting, I didn't know that. And I can be, I'm completely confident enough in my own skill and who I am and what I need to know to say, that's okay. Now, can you teach me more about that? Or, you know what, can you just point me in a direction where I can learn more about that? Or, hell, Google is your friend. you just look it up yourself. But because you have learned the craft of being in an academia, you know what it is, and you also know what it isn't. You know that it is much less magical than you thought in the beginning, and much more about a process of learning, and, you know, and never-ending learning. And that you realize also, you look around and you have brilliant people around you, but then you realize and you see the dirt under their nails, and you kind of, you know, that yes, they are probably smarter than me, but they also don't know everything, right? So, and they are also completely like in the dark in many aspects, but they are very comfortable in their own knowledge, and they know that this is just a process.
Yeah, and they trust the process, right? The idea is that if I don't know, but if I fall back to the tools that I have learned in the path, and I follow those tools, then I will end up, you know, arriving to a good port in a way.
Shall we talk about the withdrawal from our dojo?
I think that would be quite interesting, because this is another thing that now I guess you and I we are suffering.
Oh my god, yeah.
Yeah,
Zoomverse.
Yes, exactly. So we are in this world where we are very much connected, but not physically connected in a way. And for somebody that does martial art like you and I, the suffering it's double.
It's real. That's
yeah.
For sure.
So you know, not being able to go, it sounds silly, but just not to being able to go and grapple with somebody and just being thrown and throw some people. It's
right. It is. What happened? I went crazy in the spring, last spring, about almost exactly a year ago now, maybe a little bit less than a year ago, but just about a year ago, when everything went down with COVID-19, I was one of the first in my workplace at Malmö University to just said, the hell with going for a lab and teaching a lab. So I felt a little bit like, eh. So I took that as an excuse to cancel my last lab of the course I was teaching today for 7 hours or 8 hours, whatever. So I canceled the last of that class lab. And that was a start, basically. That was the start of teaching from home. What you are seeing now, I've been doing for about a year now, teaching except the summer. And some people, I guess, do that, but I certainly did. And I went, we didn't know. Yes, we're science people and we can kind of have an educated guess where it was heading, but you can never really know. You can never really understand fully how you will feel a year later of the loss and all these things and the lack of things. But I don't know. I just felt I was going to do, a million projects in one. So both at work, I helped everyone to manage their exams. I went home that Thursday. I was supposed to have a lab, or Wednesday, sorry. I was supposed to have a lab on Thursday. I skipped that lab. I told my students, "No, hell no, we're not going to, congregate with 30 people in a small place." But I was first with that. That weekend, the whole university was, I think, one of the first in Sweden that said no more.
Yeah, the South Wind Fest in
Right. So
this
Malmö
case.
University, one of the early ones that just said no more. But I had, what, 3 days on my colleagues. And because of those 3 days, I had 3 days where I looked up Zoom as a tool. Suddenly I became the expert in Zoom, which sounds ridiculous now, right? We have hundreds of, or thousands of hours. Yeah, I know. We have thousands of hours of Zoom now, but back then no one had anything and everyone was struggling to figure things out. And we were having exam times and so on. So no one knew anything about anything. And I was like, all right, I was going to help everyone about it. And so I became, one of the main characters of our department to handle and help everyone around that things. I'm kind of like a liaison for Zoom, if you like. And then, but also in Aikido, I would go nuts. So I would just like, oh, now I'm going to do A, B, C, and D, and I'm going to do all these kind of projects to connect people, make people feel, oh, we have this scare here, but let's get beyond that and let's do something. Let's use this time to make something out of it. So I would publish videos left and right, and I will, create the Zoom meetings where people can train Aikido and so on. And I would immediately initiate for our kids practice and our youth practice. I would kind of take both of them over. So I already had the kids practice back then, but the youth practice I didn't. So very quickly I would, because obviously everything went down, like the dojo and everything went down. So I was like, all right, I will do everything on Zoom. And when the spring was getting warmer, I would meet them, everyone in the park, and I would do all these things. I would take initiatives and do all these things. And it felt good. It kind of obviously it kept you on your toes, but it I guess it made sense, and you felt like you could do something useful. And I guess I was one of the it felt good to be one of the early ones and to have an idea and have a plan and had something like, because it felt like it was going to be over. It felt like you do this now and come fall it would be something else, maybe, or whatever. You felt some kind of end at sight. Oh my God. We're here a year later. And as you say, the not touching, and it sounds silly when you say it with people who don't know, people who practice Aikido in particular. The act of touching each other on the mat is almost the main thing. It's that connection of grabbing hold of someone, tossing them, or being thrown that is, at least nowadays, probably, compared to maybe in the early days, that's everything. And when you lose that, oh my God, it's a loss. It's a physical loss, and it's almost traumatic. So you did all this kind of mechanism to handle that, or I did. And now it feels empty. It feels very much like there's no interest from my point of view. I've
Yeah, and
done that.
you're just waiting for it to,
You're just waiting for the vaccination and you're waiting to be able to come back. And that wait is almost worse because now you feel like you're just lying like a flounder on the ground and doing nothing with people.
Yeah, and I think that the thing is gonna be also, it's gonna be very odd to be back because as well, like for example, it's like it's something, it's like the bicycle, let's say. You have done it for many years, so you know that once you go back you will know what to do it, but it's gonna be again, like you will have to get used to the feeling again, like the dojo feeling, the grabbing, the whole thing. It has to sort of start. And but we're very much looking forward to it, but it's also gonna be strange, right?
It is going to be strange, but I think, or at least I hope, and I no, I honestly, it's twofold. I am a little bit scared of that it has led to people not doing more, but it ended up being still different. And now, as you say, you just kind of wait. And I'm a little bit afraid that we're gonna see more people than we had hoped kind of drop out. And not, I mean, you know, that's fine. People don't have to love doing A, B, and C things or martial arts and so on. And they might even find something that they enjoy doing more than this because of this. But it you get this sense of hopelessness. And that is the that's distressing, you know. And then even if you know now we're getting there, now we're getting close, now we're getting vaccination, then you can see the end coming up. But yeah, it is tough not to be able to just go down and just even for two or three people, just like let's just go down and have fun. At least some people might do it, but I can't do it. You know, I've been sitting here for a year doing this, and then just to screw it up to by going down and getting infected, you know, last minute, which would be incredibly annoying.
But I think on the other hand, like as you know, maybe we end up with a more like hopeful note. Like we
Yeah,
know
let's do
that exactly.
that.
So
Sorry.
no, don't worry, because the only thing I wanted to say is like, I mean, we hope that we will, you know, like the vaccines are coming, we will understand this better. We will know how to, you know, behave in groups again. And the only sure thing is that martial arts will continue, and dojos will, you know, will hopefully pop back after suffering, because that's the other issue, is that without people's dojo just disintegrate slowly.
Well, yeah, for sure.
So
Some
I
people have that. I've been very involved from this, you know, been at meetings from the central Swedish Aikido and Federation and so on. And depending on if you rent from, you know, the borough and you can just say, like, all right, I don't want to rent anymore and you don't have any expenses. We don't. We have a physical place that we have a contract and it's bleeding money. We were lucky enough to have money enough for a while, but still. But that more than that, it's the emptiness. It's the non-existence of the dojo, of the realistic or the realization of a dojo. That's the tough part. I mean, we are keeping the kids and the youth program going, and without that, it would be as if we didn't exist at all. But with that, at least we have something. And I can say for sure that I feel my personal and it's that longing to be able to do the things that makes us feel good is gonna keep people doing Aikido and other martial arts. It is something about martial arts, the particular martial arts, I think, where you touch each other and you have a partnership, where you rely on someone else's, you know, basically trust. You trust someone else with your life almost. And there's something with that, the dance-like nature, the touch, the tosses, the rolls, the physical feeling of rolling and touching each other, whatever it is that you can't replace. It's very hard to find somewhere else where you do that, all of them together. There are some aspects in many other things, but now it's hard to find that in one package as much as you find in some of the martial arts, like I could include it. So yeah, I definitely think for that reason alone that Aikido and other martial arts will definitely go up once it starts opening up. I feel it might feel a little bit strange in the beginning, but I think that will people will forget that feeling real quick and just get on with things. I mean, we have had people without doing anything asking us, we want to start Aikido because people are bouncing off their walls at this point. Yeah, I think it's tough. And we see in commercial places in the US, I have a lot of friends from US and so on, it's going downhill because they have a living that they are just like wrecked. But in Sweden in particular, where we don't really tend to do a lot of that type of
Yeah, it's not a professional enterprise.
Most of the time, it's not a commercial business in that way. It's more of a non-for-profit in a different way in Sweden, that it's more a community. But I mean, looking at our dojo, we have like a handful of active people that are just there to keep the economy going. Like not even, it's the same people. We had a board meeting. We had our annual board meeting. It was the same people who came to the board. So it's like, it's depressing as all hell. But the light is in the tunnel, and the light is in the end of that tunnel is to be able to see and feel and meet each other again outside of this, and to just get that, you know, cozy feeling of being able to throw each other around and have a good time, and just you know, hugging your friends again, on and off the mat. I think it actually looks pretty good now, to my mind. In Sweden in particular, when you see, well, we're a little bit after in vaccine, but it's there, it's coming.
Yep.
So it's going to be good. It's going to be fun. And I hope we have the chance to practice whatever it is that we do.
Yep.
You know, and you can toss me around in whatever throws that you like, and I will do the same to you.
I'm pretty sure that you will do. And as soon as we can, we're going down to Lund, and we are going to go to that mat and have fun.
Oh, good.
And if not, thankfully enough, I think we both can survive even throwing each other in the grass. So.
Oh, yeah. Oh, for sure. You know, that's what we've shown ourselves. That it's not, we don't find that as a limit anymore. It's just like, yeah, well, it hurts a little bit. But
yeah, but it's still fun enough. It's still fun.
We just put a jacket on and that's good.
Exactly. But again, Jacob, it was great to have you around. It was a great chat. Thanks a lot for this.
Thank you so much for reaching out. I'm sorry, my mouth is like this. I've been teaching nonstop since 8 this morning, and who knows why I keep talking, but that's who I am. That's why you love me.
No, but it was great. So then I will say good night. Thanks for everything, and then have a great evening, and then we stay in touch.
Yes, you too, Rafa, and give your wife a hug from me, okay?
I will.